You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of June 15th, 2022. And which is more vast, the number of stars in the sky or the number of games this summer?
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a series about a humorless conversation about video games. And whoo, boy, we got them. They're out there.
We got them in 2023.
That's very fair point. By some weird, like, confluence of events, I guess it's the black hole, the empty void that we are filling both in our souls and in the spot that E3 once was in the summer. We have had the Summer Games Fest.
Yes.
Unveiling of numerous games. We had the State of Play, which we talked about not too long ago.
Yeah.
There were a couple of other announcements in between in the video game space. And Xbox and Bethesda had their own...
Semi-affiliated with Summer Games Fest thingy.
Yeah, like a game showcase.
Yeah.
Showing off a bunch of games. And when I say a bunch, it truly is a staggering amount of games. Like, yeah. Just... There are a lot of indie games in here. There's a lot of games that look really like high polished AAA. I will say there are a lot of games coming out from studios that I don't remember or have never heard of.
Oh yeah.
Which is kind of an interesting time, because when you're looking at the quality on display, at least within the, you know, tiny vertical slices or gameplay segments that we get, any one of these could be the next thing, you know? Yeah. Like any one of these could be a Hellblade. It could be like the start of a franchise, you know? Yep. So on one hand, it's exciting. On the other hand, it's like, damn, this is overwhelming because I can't play all of this shit anyway. Some of it's going to be garbage. Some of it's not going to live up to the hype. But man, there's just a lot out there of a ton of variety as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the ones that stood out to us. There's no way. I mean, even if this was like an hour long, I honestly don't think we could do justice to talk about all of them.
Yeah.
And I also want to save some time at the end in particular to talk about Bethesda's capstone, which is Starfield.
Yes.
The game that is their next IP that they've been working on for many, many years and has a lot of high expectations, which kind of want to talk about and talk about like sci-fi games in general and where we're at with that. So before we get to that, though, let's just shotgun round it.
Yeah.
What stood out for you? Anything looked cool out of all of the games that have been dumped on us?
I guess
like a bucket challenge.
I'll start with a couple from the Xbox presentation, and I mean, I guess we'll have to swoop back to it to talk about Starfield anyway, since they have Bethesda now. But anyway, on the Xbox side of the house, did you see this Flintlock game?
I did, yeah. You know what gives me the weird callback that it gives me vibes of is Arisen. Did you ever play that series of pirate games?
I know of it, but I never played it.
That's kind of what it looks like. I mean, it looks like a much nicer version than those games. That was a franchise that, you know, lived and died many years ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But it feels like a... You mentioned this when we were chatting earlier about Souls games have become a subgenre, and it feels like this is pretty closely inspired by just by looking at it. Like, you know, there's some, you know, some gameplay that looks reasonably true to what the game will actually be, despite it being in a 2023 game. And it reminds me of that Star Wars game that came out last year or 2 years ago or whatever. That was a Souls inspired type of game, and other ones, you know, Neo and a bunch of others where it is a subgenre, but this one looks like it has, you know, maybe it has a bit more of a, you know, sands some of the edges off a little bit. And then there's like some more traversal. There's, you know, some sort of, I don't know, freaky little fox pet or something that is helping you do things. But
The pet stuff actually looks the coolest, because that to me feels like you're mixing things up with some other weird abilities and also just like furry little friends you could bring with you along your journey.
Yes, it reminded me a little bit of the types of things they were doing in that traversal. Reminded me a little bit of Ratchet and Clank, you know, like the quick warps and the kind of swinging around and stuff. But I don't know. That's I also just think it's cool when you have a fully new, different franchise, which, you know, there's like a few of them here.
Yes, totally. Totally, for sure. Let's see. High on Life I wanted to talk about. So this game is from Squanch Games. Squanch.
Squanch.
This is basically Justin Roiland's, like, I don't know what. Is this like pet project or just some? I mean, he's got so many pet projects these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the... One of the, you know, from the twisted mind of Justin Roiland.
Right. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's Rick and Morty, and all the voices are Justin Roiland. And I don't know. For me, that style of comedy and that whole shtick has worn on and become a little thin to me. But I do think it's a weird enough game. The basic premise is that it's almost like a looter shooter-esque style experience. That's what it looks like on the cover. But all of your weapons talk to you and are these gross little animate objects, you know, that, you know, one of them says the things that you shoot out are its little babies, but that's okay because, like, it just keeps making more of them.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's kind of gross like that, and they make weird squishy noises. There's, like, a knife that really loves stabbing and killing people to the point that it makes you uncomfortable to, like, watch and probably wield this knife. So, I don't know. I mean, it looks weird enough to have caught my eye. But I don't know, maybe mileage will vary on that style of humor.
Well, it's also just freakishly realistic in a way, you know. It definitely has that artistic style that Rick and Morty has, but it's fully 3D first person, high fidelity, but also super stylized, that it's just unsettling, and like all the, you know, a lot of weird teeth. All of the monsters and stuff. It's just a very strange presentation of everything.
Well, it also had one of the weapons. All of the weapons are voiced, which I think is really cool. Yeah. One of the weapons is voiced by, I forget the actor's name. He's the guy that says, "Get in that ass, Larry," from the Larry David show.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. I'm sleep deprived. I can't think of it now, but I know who exactly you're talking about.
I cannot hear that voice and not just cackle with laughter. Yeah. You know? So, like, there's a part of me that I think is just... very much interested in this game and to see how it turns out. These types of projects are always weird, though, right? Yeah. Because are any of them good? Like, I don't know. It just, it always feels like something that is a passion project and not actually, it's like built to showcase the humor rather than the gameplay.
JB Smoove is who we were trying to think of, by the way.
But like the game, and you know, per my point, right? Like, JB Smoove is hilarious voice actor, and I would love to like spend time with him as a gun. I think that would be really funny, right? But how much enjoyment can you get out of that shtick, and does the gameplay hold up? And I think what we've seen looks fine, but, you know, I don't know.
I feel like the high watermark of this sort of endeavor is South Park, The Stick of Truth.
Yes, yeah.
You know, like, it was very funny, very true to the source material, but clearly a real game. I mean, like, there were actual systems in that game, which is fascinating, but it wasn't a 50-hour game. You know, they were able to scope it to the point where when it was ready to be done, it was done. I think that's kind of the high watermark that I would hold that sort of game to.
Amount of care that the South Park team put into it is absurd. Like, everything got their visual approval, you know? Like, they very much cared about that game. So it wasn't something where it's just like, oh, this is in the universe of Rick and Morty as a kind of marketing scheme. Not that I would say High in Life is that, because Justin Roiland is voicing some of these characters. So I'm sure it was a lot of work, but yeah, we'll see.
Okay, let's switch to disturbing space games, of which there are approximately 50.
Man.
Okay. Have they ever made a good Aliens game?
They made I forget what it was called, the stealth one, where they would take you through tunnels and scared the fucking shit out of me. Alien Insurrection, right?
Isolation, I believe.
Isolation, yes.
I would submit to you that was more of an interesting game and not a good game.
Okay, fair enough.
But there's another Aliens game coming out, and it just fascinates me that they keep making Aliens games.
Yeah.
Do Aliens games have any allure for you?
Yes. So I play the Alien RPG. I ran like a tabletop game. And there is something really fun about that, when you can really like lean into the horror and the...
That universe is great. I mean,
yeah, the universe is great. Yeah. Well, I guess that's my point, right? Is like, if you can set something in the universe and the idea of like everyone is just a slave to the man,
and Weyland Yutani.
Yeah, and like to Weyland Yutani and the government, like you're disposable fodder, right? Mm-hmm. And the entire experience is you trying to fight back and say you matter, when ultimately even the existence of these aliens is proof that at the cosmic level you don't matter. That Weyland Yutani is right, you know? And what little you can do is like try to kill what aliens and or Yutani scumbag you can, in order to maintain whatever tiny scrap of meaning is left in the cold, dark universe, right? That to me is a really fun playground to experience.
But see, the way you describe that is what I want. I don't know if I've ever gotten that from an Aliens game.
Well, so, I mean, yes. I mean, this is a preview of the conversation around Starfield as well.
Yeah.
But I think that the vision of what these space games can be and what they actually are, are just... distances apart, light years apart, one might say.
Parsecs apart.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll put space to the side for a moment. What else stands out for you?
So there isn't. So I just want to follow up on that one, because they are making a Nemesis game. Nemesis is a board game that is what this video game is based off of. Very much like Among Us vibes, and I think it can work. Because I really enjoy the board game quite a bit. And one of the sort of central ideas of the board game is that you all are on your own mission, right? Right? Like, you need to survive. You've been infested by aliens. That's clearly like an alien knockoff, right? But each of you also have your own motivations, some of which might run counter to even just people surviving. Like, what if one of your missions is, I got to get one of these aliens and keep them alive?
Yeah.
And someone else's mission is eradicate all the aliens. And so you are... undermining their success without letting them know that that's your ultimate goal, right? And having that secret secondary goal is super compelling and actually creates some of the fun drama in Aliens. And the Alien RPG does that well also, right?
Yeah.
So if anything is going to be like a better encapsulation of what the dream of an Alien game might be like, actually, I think the Nemesis multiplayer Among Us style video game could do that better.
Yeah, right. Is it, I mean, I'm assuming it's played seriously. I mean, whereas Among Us is definitely a kind of, social hub
very much
type
so.
Of thing.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. Very much so. Yeah. And first person, which leans better into the horror of it all.
Yeah. How can I call people sus in it?
I mean, you can certainly call people sus. It's Nemesis sus. Nemesis sus distress.
Oh my God. Amazing. The branding is right there.
Yeah. Come on. What are you talking about? Oh my gosh. Okay,
more games.
A Plague Tale sequel.
I never played that first game, but I always wanted to.
It's really good. Yeah. You would really enjoy it quite a bit. Yeah. I mean, again, just like I was talking about with the games that come out of nowhere every year, right? Any one of these could be that, right? Plague Tale was a surprise hit, what, 2-3 years ago when it came out.
Yeah.
That team was very small, you know, like, and they put together a game that felt AAA, felt very good. The rat controlling mechanic was super sweet. Just like Hellblade, it's getting a follow-up that looks like they've got a bigger team, a bigger budget, bigger marketing budget. So, yeah, I am quite excited for that one.
It's cool. It's also just, it's cool. Again, I guess I'm just in the mood for new franchises, but it's cool that they're giving that another chance. Let's see. We talked about this before we started recording, but for whatever reason, I played a lot of Flashback years ago.
Had not remembered this until you had. I looked up video footage upon you sharing it.
Yeah, it's kind of a sci-fi cyberpunk 2D platforming game with the artistic style of Another World, Out of This World, or the, you know, super old kind of rotoscoped Prince of Persia, you know, very exacting, very puzzle platformer, you know, instant death, restart at the last screen type of thing.
Yep.
And they're making a Flashback 2, which was very funny to me because I had no sense of whether Flashback was a popular game or not. And so when I see something like Flashback 2, it seems hyper-targeted at me, who for some reason spent a lot of time playing Flashback.
I am really interested to see how challenging it is.
Yeah.
Because those games were so hard.
Those old games were real pains in the asses. I mean, like, you really have to it was kind of the precursor to something like Limbo, weird way.
It's more about like memorizing the world and the threat rather than reaction timing, because the windows of failure they're so tight. The success windows are tight.
And there's a fair amount of just, you know, I remember in those flashback games, you had to get like a holo cube and then recharge it at the station, then bring it back to the thing that unlocked it, and then go and find a new charger. I mean, there was a fair amount of plotting, puzzle solving in those games, and what that means in a modern context. I would imagine it has to change, but it's just funny that they're mining so much IP that even something like Flashback has some value, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Oh my gosh. Okay, what else? Hollow Knight Silksong.
The game that I thought had come out 2 years ago.
Did you ever play Hollow Knight?
No, it's on my list of things that I know I'll probably like.
I mean, put Plague Tale aside. Like, Hollow Knight is so good.
I fully expect it. It's one of those things that I kind of... there's just not enough hours in the day, and I'm like, I'm assuming that I would love this game. You know, I think you would. It's like a foregone conclusion.
You could play it in bite-sized pieces. I mean, there's a lot to remember, and the map is remarkably large. Like, there's a lot of game in Hollow Knight, which is remarkable. But, like, man, I really think Silksong is going to be such a cool... I have such high hopes for that game.
Yeah.
What bumps me out is the gameplay trailer did not have a launch date. It's already June. Man, I don't know. Like, if we don't know when it's coming out, I can't think that it'll be this year, which is a bummer.
They've talked about that game for... Like, I really did think it was out already. They've talked about that game for such a long time, and the first one was so well-received that, you know, I thought it was here already, but can we talk a little bit about the... I mean, this is not necessarily a new game, but it's a new setup. Like, how is the Microsoft Game Pass... League of Legends Valorant thing working?
Yeah, so the way that it's working, so Riot announced that they are coming to Game Pass, which is a little bit weird because these games are already free to play.
Yeah.
The idea, though, is that if you are a Game Pass subscriber, you will gain access to pretty much everything that's in the game. So day one, like, let's say you've never played League of Legends before, you will unlock every single League of Legends character. There are a fuck ton of League of Legends characters. Yeah. There's got to be, what, like 120 characters?
I was going to say dozens and dozens of characters over the years, right?
Many, many characters. So you basically get all of them. If you've even been playing League of Legends for like 4 years, there's a good chance that unless you play a lot, you don't own all the champions.
Yeah.
And so the idea of pay $15, get Game Pass, unlock all of those champions when you play. Maybe you have to play through Game Pass, I don't know.
Yeah.
You get all those characters. You also unlock all of them in Wild Rift, which is their mobile version. That alone is incredible too, because there's not a cross share between the two games. So if you own a character in League, you don't automatically get it in Wild Rift. You unlock all of the characters in Valorant. You unlock, I think, a bunch of archetypes in the card game, as well as Teamfight Tactics. So you just get like an absolutely bonkers, insane amount of value in that Riot ecosystem if you own Game Pass.
Is this a going forward thing? Like, if they release a new character, do you get that, you think?
I think so. Honestly, I think so. Yeah.
Man, what do you think? There's no way of knowing this, but how that deal goes down. Like, what money is exchanging hands in order for that to be a thing?
I wish I knew, dude. I wish I knew how much money. I have to believe that Xbox is giving them a large chunk of change.
Yeah.
But I also have to believe that League of Legends is an older game. There's a lot more competition, not in MOBA, but just for the sheer amount of time, right?
Yeah.
So I have to believe that there's a cost calculation where they figure, look, the vast majority of money that they make are off of whales like me talking on the podcast who spend money on skins, right?
Yeah.
And I've already unlocked all of the characters, right? And I have, in fact, I have so much like blue essence, it's called, in the game that I will never have to pay money to unlock a character again. I'll just always be able to get whatever character as soon as they come out.
Right.
No concern. And so for those core people that spend against the game that have been playing League for a long time, you know, how do you get more of those people? How do you convert more people into playing the game a lot, experiencing the any number of characters that you want, and really getting to the point where you're spending currency towards skins?
Right.
Just unlock it all. Just give them the value. And if Xbox is giving them a chunk of change in order to provide that value, it seems like a huge win-win.
Oh yeah. And I'm assuming Valorant works similarly, right? Like in terms of the
man. I mean, skins make money, dude. Especially for these types of games, and it makes sense. Like you know, you're playing the game a lot. Your friends are you're playing with your friends. You're playing against enemies. They can see your skin. You can see your skin. A lot of work, great work, goes into the design of skins in really any live title, right? Yeah. From Apex Legends, Rainbow, like whatever. There's a ton of games out there that this is how they monetize. And for me, if you're not going to be a pay-to-win game, which a lot of these companies have vowed not to be, and nobody wants to be from a player perspective, then it's these premium track skins that are going to be your moneymakers. So you can sign deals like this where you give out absurd value to get people on board. It is genuinely, I think, to me, indicative of the overall Xbox showcase, which is just the absurd amount of value you have on display at the showcase. I think we talked about it over a year ago about how like Xbox was really well positioned with Game Pass to really compete again against Sony. Yeah. This to me feels like the nail in the coffin, because if you compare this showcase with Bethesda to the State of Play, it's night and day. Like there's just so much content here. All of it, almost all of these trailers ended with available Game Pass day one.
Yes, and that was the thing that was the exact thing we were saying about the PlayStation Plus stuff, where it's like, it's not even a comparison after this, you know, like what Sony is doing is child's play compared to what Microsoft is doing, you know, and maybe that's
it's convoluted.
Three different SKUs, three different set. Yes. Like it's crazy. Like, you know, some of them are cloud, but no, if you have this SKU, you can download. It's like, and I've Microsoft is making emails. It so easy.
I've gotten three emails this week from Sony being like, here's how things are changing.
Oh my
Just
God.
So you know, this is what they're changing. Here's a CRM message that's got like 15 paragraphs, no images. Like, here's really how much you're going to get charged. It's just, it doesn't show me the value of what I'm getting for that. It is absolutely absurd to me when you compare these two things back to back.
And I mean, maybe this is just speaks to Microsoft having a near infinite supply of money to throw at the problem, or maybe it also speaks to just Microsoft's experience as a software company, that they understand how SaaS works and Sony doesn't, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
It's crazy.
To go back to how we were talking about the display of games from studios that we've never heard of.
Right? Yeah.
These are teams that have been given a huge chance because they're coming up in this period where Microsoft is spending heavily, right? This to me reminds me of like the early Netflix days, where Netflix was just throwing money because they just wanted to get as much content out there as possible.
Yeah.
That to me seems like what's going on now. So I think a lot of these games are not going to be great, but there are going to be teams out there that get a foot in the door in regards to becoming like well-known studios because of this opportunity. And the value that you get as a Game Pass subscriber, I mean, again, not sponsors of this podcast, but it boggles my mind.
I don't even subscribe to Game Pass yet, but I'm definitely, I mean, after today, I'm like, well, it's just a matter of time. Because at a certain point, I want to play a couple of these games, you know?
Sure, yeah. Well, and you can try any of them as you want. It's just, there's so much variety here. And, you know, we have games like the folks that made Neo from Bandai Tecmo Koei, whatever.
Yeah.
Bandai Namco. You know, they've got like
Koei, I think, because Bandai is Souls.
That's right. So Tecmo's got like a new Neo-like game. And, you know, there are games out here. Callisto Protocol, right? Folks that worked on
Dead Space.
I don't know. I don't recall if that was the Xbox one. I think it was. There's just a lot here. It's pretty absurd.
One of the ones that caught my eye, Kojima Productions, next game, Xbox Game Studios.
Yeah.
That's all they said about it. Well, actually, let me find the Kojima quote. Ah, these are translated remarks. There is a game I have always wanted to make. It's a completely new game that no one has ever seen or experienced before.
No one could think of this. Only I alone, Kojima-san.
I've waited very long for the day when I could finally start to create it.
Finally, at long last, this is the game that will receive my director's cut.
With Microsoft's cutting-edge cloud technology and the change in the industry's trend, it has now become possible to challenge myself to make this never-before-seen concept.
So funny, dude. But is it a strand game?
I mean, the fact that he name-checked the cloud technology stuff suggests to me that it is almost certainly a strand
game. Hell yeah, it's a fucking strand game. Oh my goodness.
But again, you know, they're out there doing deals with everyone. They're doing everything from buying Bethesda to giving Kojima a chunk of money and just tell him come back in a few years with what you got. You know, sure. I mean, it's just that sort of stuff is very funny and very exciting to me.
I mean, you would too, right?
If I was a reclusive billionaire, I would just become.
Yeah, why is Elon Musk trying to go to the moon? Just give the money to Kojima and he'll make something great.
The true journey is the journey within.
Okay, we haven't left much time for ourselves, but I do want to talk about Starfield.
Let's talk about
Starfield. Highly anticipated game. They showcased 15 minutes of gameplay, which really showed off quite a bit. Because
I also place some scare quotes around this gameplay, by the way. I mean, it seems like gameplay-ish.
Well, I get a lot of No Man's Sky vibes. And it's not just... One, it's the overpromise, right? Like, there's just a lot of anticipation on here. And my concern is, are we being promised too much?
Yeah.
And then two, it just looks like a lot of the same systems, right? Like, we see a laser gun mining ore.
Yes.
You can build your own ships. You're exploring these planets. But the planets looked very lifeless to me. They said in the interview with Todd Howard that there would be 1,000 planets that you can visit. Now, this is a single-player game, so that number is crazy. Like, that's just such a huge number of planets that you can go explore. But then we're stuck in that same problem that No Man's Sky had, which is, are they going to feel like real planets, or are they going to feel like lifeless, you know, color swaps of the same planet? Right. Yeah. That. And what I realized about this gameplay... trailer as well, because they showed story, right? We had all these people seriously in a room being like, we gotta explore the stars and we found ancient artifacts out there. And I was just thinking about all the space games that we were shown off and what Starfield represents. And I think I came to the realization that having watched TNG over the last couple of years, I think it's ruined space
games. Well, like, that's why I was always so, I mean... That's why I always appreciated Mass Effect, because it was like, oh, they made the closest thing you could make to a Star Trek game, you know?
Yeah, like, it just, there is a self-seriousness to our vision of space that I just find so fucking uninspiring.
All right.
Like, it doesn't inspire me with hope for the future. It doesn't trigger in me the sort of, even like the For All Mankind Apple TV series, which is like, you know, what drives you to space isn't, we gotta fucking... poke holes in rocks, right? It is, it's a human desire to push yourselves and be creative and be ingenuitive and rely upon one another, right? Like, that is what drives people out there. And when you think about, like, being in outer space and what is that space for? Like, what does that boundless opportunity mean in the context of the people who are forging your path there are citizens of today, right? Like, what does space look like from, like, a radically, you know, like, Afro-Latin trans identity perspective look like? And, you know, there's all these different ways of imagining a future that's populated by human beings who can trace their lineage back to 2022, right? Instead, what we get over and over again is a sort of futuristic, industrial, sepia-toned, you know, attempts that... And it almost feels like that someone took the leftover trappings of Aliens and Blade Runner and put together like a space experience and missed out on what both of those franchises were actually doing with the way that human beings interacted with one another. And it just, again, 15 minutes of gameplay, I watched it all. Like, I'm trying to be optimistic, but like, man, I think we fucked up somewhere fundamentally with our expectations about space in video games.
Because we're... weirdly, because we're too focused on the space.
I think we're too focused on the space. And not the people. Like, we got to get a bunch of planets. Like, are there interesting people out there? Like, I don't know. It's just... and this is, again, I go back to, like, High on Life, right? Which is, at the very least, it's weird, right? Like, it's weird aliens, and it's out-of-the-box thinking when it comes to what space is, you know? Yeah. There's even a line in High on Life where it's like, we all live in space. Even you live in space on Earth. You're in space right now, right?
You're right.
That's a simple joke, but if you just take that, like, psychologically, right, and expand that outwards, well, then space should be... I mean, I know real space is vastly, you know, predominantly empty, but, like, I'm not a geologist. Like, I don't give a fuck about mining space rock, you know? Like, I'm glad I can make my ship, but what the fuck does it matter if I can't make my ship, like, skin in an interesting way and have character and interact with other people where like that character is on display. Like it just feels so soulless.
I wonder if, I mean,
or am I responding too strongly, or like, what are your thoughts? Like,
no, I mean, I think I don't get a sense of what the identity of this game is, other than, you know, there's a lot of majestic music. It seems like they are going for a tone of discovery, but they're kind of narratively,
it sounds like it, right? They're like, oh, we got to go to space.
Yeah.
See what's out there.
I mean, I think, what was that game that we played at the end of last year? It was by the sword and sorcery people. The Hymn Wave. I forget what it's. Jet, the Far Shore.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like that game that much, but I liked the tone of that because it was kind of this weird humanistic version, you know, the cultural version of what space, like what does a human culture look like once they go into space? You know, what with religion and their art and everything. And even though I didn't really finish or like the game even all that much, I played way more of it than I thought I would because there was a humanistic quality to it in the way that you describe.
Whereas travel was like a spiritual experience.
Exactly. Like the line between, you know, science and religion for them, obviously they were highly technologically advanced, that society in that game, but they had married their religion into that science. And so, which is just interesting. It's like an interesting sci-fi concept. But I wish they would lead more with something. And you know Bethesda could do it, right? Because they do games like Fallout and Skyrim, and they know how to write stories. I just don't know. I don't know what the angle is for this, other than it's big, you know.
Yeah.
What is the theme of Starfield? And that's the sort of that, you know, when I look at Starfield, it's. It might as well be a Kickstarter game to me. Like, it seems that generic in a weird way. Yes, you know, like it seems like, what's that crazy game that you know, the biggest Kickstarter of all time, Star Citizen. It seems as generic as Star Citizen, which doesn't hold much allure. You know, even though the music is telling me that I should feel this awe and wonder, I'm like, but what's the point? Like, what are we actually doing here?
Yeah.
You know? It's strange, but because they seem to be betting very big on this game.
Where do you think they went wrong? Because what's so interesting to me, right, about the state of sci-fi in video games is, to me, it strikes me as a writing issue, right? Because there is not a lack of progressive, fascinating, fun, strange sci-fi out there. We've gotten a lot of it over the past 10 years, and we could go further back, right? Like, we have Octavia Butler, we have Ursula K. Le Guin that have been writing fascinating human-centric sci-fi for longer than I've been alive. Like, there's great sci-fi out there. I mean, fuck, I was talking about Arthur C. Clarke and how weird of a story I forget what the novel we were talking about was. The podcast a couple weeks ago, right? But like, you don't have to go very far back in history, or conversely, you can go very far back in history and find a lot of science fiction that is not this really boring, industrial, black and white, like, aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it's just like, are the people making it not reading enough? Like, are they just not partaking enough in, like, cultural creations and what people are doing in no pun intended, space? Like,
it's right. I mean, I think there is also a kind of industrial and mechanical reality of video games where everything has to have crafting these days, and everything has to have some sort of open world or exploration component to it. And so that does lock you into certain types of aesthetics in a weird way, because, like, well, I guess if we have to craft, then we have to mine. And if we have to mine, we have to have rocks. And if we have to break up these rocks, we have to have machinery to do it. And pretty soon everything looks like a mining colony, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point. But to me, that's a failure of imagination.
I agree. But I just think there's probably a lot of, like industry pressure to be like, this game has to have certain things. And so it's like, crap, how do we write our way out of this? you know, and still make something that's gonna, like, how do we be creative, satisfy the trends of the industry, but also sell 10 million copies of this? You know, like, it just seems like the needle in a weird way gets smaller and smaller to thread, you know, for these big games, you know?
I also wonder if there is, I mean, maybe this is like a topic for a whole other podcast, but, you know, even looking at some of the darker games on display here, you know, it's a rough time. It's 2022.
Yeah.
A lot of these games have been developed, you know, in some rough goes, you know, like Trump era, COVID era scenario. I also wonder if part of it is just the same feeling of, well, if we want to be taken seriously, then narratively our game must be serious. And if our game is going to be serious, right, if we're going to be taken seriously as like a space game, then we need to sort of cave to, I don't know, what I might call like cultural nihilism, right? Like that the future is this, that mm-hmm. this is the future that mankind has in front of it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, to me, so much of what we do with our fiction is a self-fulfilling prophecy, you know?
Like
the power of fiction is to write to our outs, you know? Like imagine what things can be. And that's what makes, again, like why TNG has ruined it for me, right? Like Star Trek has ruined sci-fi because that was written with an earnest attempt of saying, yes, the world is like this. Yes, these are real problems that people deal with because the crew of the Enterprise encounter civilizations like that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it's not easy. They didn't solve everything. You know, like there's still wars with Klingons and shit, but like,
even in their own society, like they run into people, they run into asshole admirals. They run into the guy who wants to like dismantle Data. Like, I mean, there's assholes, but like there is a sense of like, there is a sense of discovery and improvement that is divorced from an ironic sneer. That is more inspiring, I think.
Right. Like, and you can challenge yourself, I think, as people in a creative space to imagine a future. It doesn't have to be like everything. It doesn't have to be roses, right? Like you don't have to be, and it doesn't have to be silly either. Like I think you can walk this in between line where it feels representative, right? Like, I don't know. I'm Firefly, right? Like, I don't know how well that ages, and we're in a sort of, post, what's his face? Joss Whedon era. For very good reasons. But, you know, I think for a lot of people that stood out because it was sci-fi with this Western cultural thing, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was just a different way to imagine things.
Well, even something like to stay on the movie and TV show topic, something like The Fifth Element, I always thought was really
interesting. Great example. Yeah. You know?
Because it's definitely sci-fi-ish, but there was this weird universe and you're basically following this guy who's a taxi driver, but also there's weird kind of Egyptian mythology, you know, into it. Like it's, you can do sci-fi and have it be weird but also serious, but also the whole point of The Fifth Element is that The Fifth Element is woof. You know, just, you know, you can there's room for that if you're willing to, I think, in a weird way, be brave enough to put something out there that is a little bit silly.
Alex Garland, who did what he did on Ex Machina, right?
Yeah.
Like he works on sci-fi that is still, you know, it looks different. It feels grounded in the reality that we live today. Devs is another show that he worked on, right? Like it has a look to it, and it's not TNG look, but it's certainly its own thing. You know, he did Annihilation, another awesome book series, and I think a great film that is weird and sci-fi-y, but has totally its own tone, totally its own aesthetic, and runs with it. You know, like we can do these things. In fact, I think he worked on Enslaved Odyssey to the West. I think he was a co-writer on that
game. Interesting.
Which again, another sci-fi game that imagines it a little bit differently, right?
Yeah.
We have Horizon Zero Dawn, which I think today is what, like the best AAA sci-fi game that is imagining things being different, you know, because it's going back and it's sort of changing that setting and vibe a little bit. But again, man, like you just see this shit from Bethesda, and to me, it just looks completely uninspired.
It's I'm fascinated by how this game has just so much weight on it. I mean, you know, brand new franchise, people have kind of gone back and forth on Bethesda stuff for a few games now. There's just a lot of, I can feel the pressure on this game.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not like a fun pressure, you know, Elden Ring was fun pressure to me, where it's like, oh man, are these maniacs going to pull it off? Where this just seems, you know, this seems not fun to me as an outsider. You know, this seems just kind of like there's a doom coming, and hopefully they'll pull it off. But it seems like there is a, it seems like there's just a lot riding on this.
Well, I mean, hopefully I'm proven wrong, but I don't think so, to be honest.
I rarely play these Bethesda games, so I'm just kind of an interested observer, and you know, seeing how this impacts what they do with their future stuff too. I mean, it's just such a big bet. I mean, maybe this is one of the reasons why it looks so attractive to be in the Microsoft fold. You know, because this game feels like one of those make or break studio games, but now that you have Microsoft's backing, maybe this doesn't sink the ship if it doesn't take off, you know?
Yeah,
very interesting.
It doesn't take off.
It fails to launch. Man, there's so many other games. I could spend like an hour just watching trailers here, but I guess the moral of the story is that you just subscribe to Game Pass and Microsoft has you forever or something.
Yep, I think that's the story.
Whew. All right, we will leave it there for this week then. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And ExperiencePoints.net is our space station in the sky. Orbit with us, won't you? Find us wherever you find podcasts. Do us a favor, tell a friend, leave us a review.
Geosynchronous orbit only, please.
Yes.
All right, until next week, everyone, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Ciao.